This is Beyond the Wall, a Game of Thrones LCG podcast brought to you by Istril and Darknotch. We'd like to thank Fantasy Flight Games for our hobby and their continued support, Drew Dallas at Card Game DB for our hosting, and the AGOT community as a whole for making this possible. Let us take you beyond the wall.
Welcome to another episode of Beyond the Wall. Today we're going to have a little bit of intro news, then we're going to talk about the Gen Con melee, then we'll have a little bit of an intermission, talk about news that came out of Gen Con. After that we'll talk about the Gen Con joust, and then finally some closing comments.
All right, John, so this is episode 29, and this episode is the first in which we don't have a guest since way back when we built the Quentin deck for Store Championships.
I think it's because I'm probably going to talk way too much about my Gen Con experience. I ended up being fortunate enough to do really well, so I'll probably ramble for prolonged periods of time.
Well, we can just claim, so, I mean, normally we only have the two of us, but now we have me, and we have the Gen Con Melee Champion and the Gen Con Overall Champion. One of those is a guest.
So I'm a guest and a host?
Sure. You can ask yourself the difficult questions.
That might get confusing, Alex, especially since, though I did sleep a little bit now, I'm not 100%.
All right, well, this episode will be a little less organized and a little less structured. We're recording it. We're trying to get it up a couple hours after we record it. This is a little frantic. But a couple of news items I'd like to address. So our contest winner, Vladislav, wrote to me and told me he got his cards. So they made it all the way to Lithuania rather than Latvia, which is good.
That is good. Or there'd be some really happy guy in Latvia.
We did get our CP review up the day before, basically the day I think John was heading out to Gen Con later that night. But Card Game DB got the chapter pack spoilers up before Gen Con, so we got a chance to review that. And actually, I've got a ton of great feedback about that one. It went quickly, we went through the cards quickly, we had buzz on, and people really liked it. So we'll definitely have to hire him again, despite the exorbitant fees.
Yeah, I guess he was worth it. That's what happens when you get an all-star on the cast.
That's right. We also, I wanted to briefly mention that we had talked about how Alex Triganakis had played with a hand tied behind his back and didn't have the steel link in his Rusted Maesters, and it sort of made out the judges to have probably been a little too harsh. The helmet previous guest on the show, who was the judge at that tournament, posted a comment on episode 28 clarifying the situation that, you know, he realized he was missing steel link after his first game, and it was a little late to change things at that point. So, you know, essentially, I think we were a little harsh on not knowing the situation, but it's worth reading Helmut's post. It's actually very well written, quite funny, as a reply. So check that out in the comments on episode 28. And finally, you know how last week we were talking about ways that we could increase the number of listeners and the number of fans and things like that? Did you get any comments for that?
Yeah, so I talked with Dodd. He's a host of a... another podcast that focuses on Netrunner, and he's a prominent figure in the AGOT community as well. He goes to a lot of events, which is great. And he came and talked with me, and he won the contest since he was the only one that submitted an idea. But he didn't want the house cards. What he wanted was the Martell power tokens, so that's what he is going to be receiving from me shortly.
Oh, you've got Martell power tokens coming out of your... basically. well, I look forward to hearing some of those ideas, to implementing some of those ideas. But I think you did something very, very important, because in the last, like, 3 days, basically since Gen Con coverage sort of slowed down, we've gotten 50 new likes on the Facebook page. So I think what we really need to do is just have the People's Champion, Darknotch, do well at tournaments.
How did I become the People's Champion? I thought that was Trevor
from Canada. It was Trevor, but Trevor wasn't there at Gen Con, was he?
Yeah, he was.
Okay. Oh, well, then we have to think up a new title for you.
Yeah. We'll think of something else.
All right, John, so tell us about your Gen Con adventure.
Well, it started with Melee. Sadly, we only had 53 people registered for the Melee, which is kind of a downgrade in attendance. I think more and more people have been soured from Melee for one reason or another, which is too bad because I think the game itself has a completely different skill set than Joust, and is quite fun, especially in a casual setting. Now, competitive Melee, I myself am not sure of. I think maybe it's time for FFG to look at some other format to combine with Joust, maybe draft, for instance, in order to have a better overall experience for the largest number of people possible.
Now, first of all, to be entirely fair, this attitude towards Melee seems predominant in North America and not elsewhere. The European metas are much fonder of Melee, so that's clearly not a universal experience. It might just be that we're no fun at playing Melee. The other reason I think the Melee numbers are probably down is because it was on the Thursday, and that's the first time that's ever happened.
Yeah, and that was really tough for a lot of people. Like, I had to change my flight, and I know some people were saying, you know, it's not worth the extra, whatever, $150 to change my flight so I can make Melee. So that could have been one of the big reasons as well, you're right.
So what did you bring against my better advice?
I brought a Greyjoy Black Sails because I wanted to be the only one around. It was different, and it was really good against dragons, and I expected a lot of dragons. And I wasn't disappointed because there was three dragons decks at my final table.
Yeah, and I'd specifically advise you against this deck for a couple of reasons. Clearly, I know nothing about Melee.
Well, you were worried about overcommitting to challenges because you didn't want to navel in guys and stuff like that. But getting into the hold in Melee is really good because you can get those power grab events and then you can just explode and go from, you know, 1 or 2 power to 16 or 20 power very quickly. Especially Greyjoy because they have a bunch of the power grab events that aren't restricted. So, like Assertion of Might.
Yeah.
Or they have an event that lets people do a second challenge if the first one was unopposed of the same type, so you can do double power challenges and stuff like that. So that really lets them accelerate very quickly if they can somehow guarantee those cards in hand. And the Black Sails lets them do that. So my Melee experience was interesting for a couple reasons. The first thing that was interesting, at my very first table, I went back on a deal. This was the first time I've ever gone back at a deal, and it totally didn't work out for me. So I had made a deal with one of the other players at the table, and basically it was that he would let me get an unopposed challenge, bring me up to 14 power, basically, and that I would stop my challenges, and then he would win, and I would get second with 14 power, which is max score. Of course, once I did that, I stood my character using a response on an attachment, and proceeded to attempt another challenge to win the game, which he had to throw considerable resources at to prevent. So much so that he wasn't able to win on his turn. And so we both ended up tying at 12 power for second, which was a pretty significant hit on my overall score because I ended up with 4 points instead of 7.
But when you're that close to getting the game, you have to. I mean, anything else is soft playing, is actually talked about in the rules where you've got to try to play for the best placement possible. And when you're a power away from winning and you think you can get it, you got to try.
I knew that he could stop me. I just didn't think he would sacrifice his second place for it. But I was wrong.
Ah, nice.
So that was interesting. I saw a very interesting deck. There's a gentleman at DC that used to be a very competitive Magic player that left the game, but he had won some major events, and he was known for playing decks that had very few characters or none at all, kind of like combo-y or burn decks and stuff like that. And in Melee, this gentleman, the Wizard, decided to bring...
This is David Gearhart, right? He's the winner of the DC Regional most recently.
Yes, that is correct. Yeah. In this case, in the Melee, he had a combo that would basically let him win and then give whatever placement he wanted to the rest of the table. And his plan was...
At your table?
No, this was next to my table. Ah. So I got to see some of it go off. I didn't get to see the full combo, but it was basically using Satin to deck everyone at the table and a cycling of plots to get everyone's cards back on top of their deck. Which resulted in no one having a board or any cards left in their deck, and then him being able to basically control the game from that point on because he had his whole deck in his hand. But And he could have just won outright, right, like cycling Winter Festival or something, but he chose to do it this way because his plan was to take first at all his tables and give second with maximum power, 14 power, to everyone else so that it wouldn't really ruin their strength of schedule and they could still play their other games and wouldn't ruin their day, basically. But he found out that the rules actually gave everyone at the table fourth, which is a pretty significant difference. So he decided that he didn't want to give this negative experience to everyone, so he dropped after giving himself fourth at the table he had just fully controlled.
So I can't help myself. So this combo, so you're using Satin. So what was he using to stand Satin?
So he wasn't using anything to stand Satin. He was using a Baratheon character where you kneel and influence to stand the Baratheon character.
Renly. Oh, yes. Okay. So he was making Renly a Night's Watch.
Absolutely.
So this was prepare for war, wasn't it?
Yes.
Oh, I see.
All the locations. And he demonstrated this to the judges at Plot Cycle. He was using the influence event from Martell to cycle the plots, which we've
seen. Scheming on the sands, then.
Yeah. So he would normally go last, do that all in marshalling, so that everyone was basically mostly decked. And then the next turn, I think he won, basically. Like, he would do the rest of the combo. Mm-hmm. To cycle it all up and then discard everyone's stuff and win. So it was interesting. He showed it to the judges and then decided not to play. I think he could have easily gone very far in the melee with it. Like, if the right people had Harrenhals out on turn one and canceled the right things and he wasn't able to cancel their cancels, then it could have went bad for him. But it was still a very interesting deck, and he was obviously a really nice guy not to subject a lot of people to it once it was demonstrated.
Mm-hmm.
Another interesting deck was brought by Kevin from Texas, and Kevin was running a deck that was HOD. What's the location
Dorn.
That reduced Dorn?
Yeah, yes, I saw his lists posted on CardGameDB.
And all the attachments, he was throwing out all these attachments on everyone's houses, and then basically anyone did any type of challenge, he would gain a power from it. And he had a bunch of challenge control events in his own deck, so that when people tried to, like, take that power away, he could Birdie on the Sands and stuff like that. So it was pretty interesting.
Yeah, it's a really neat deck list. It's worth checking out. It was posted in a thread in CardGameDB, so it's just... I think he boasts both his Joust and his Melee deck.
I had the pleasure of playing against the 2C1C, some of the 2C1C hosts. It was a pretty good game. It was very nice. Had a lot of fun. But I think the two tables that made the biggest difference for me making the Swiss, the one table that made the difference, I should say, was the table where Morgan had a choice between myself or another player to attack on her final power challenge, which would win her the turn. And whoever she attacked, because we had the same power total, would take third, and the other, both in a position where we had enough points from previous tables that it probably meant one of us was making the cut and one of us wasn't. And I had negotiated with her at the very beginning of the plot phase to make myself go first, which would allow her to go last. And the reason that she wanted that was because she was running a Bear of the Wall deck where her guys don't kneel to defend, so her strategy was always, of course, to go last so she could defend whatever challenges she want without kneeling out and then attack. And she said, well, that's not a big thing for me, so what do I have to give you? And I said, just a small thing that won't hurt you at all. So when we got around and she had to make that decision, I said, remember that small thing? This is that small thing. It doesn't hurt you at all. And she agreed, and she challenged the other gentleman who lost the power and let me go on. So
that's a tied for second, so a third, a first, and a second to get through.
Yeah, and I was right on the cusp. Then at my first cut table, I was sitting next to a metamate, Adam, who was just eating the snot out of me for most of the game, kneeling my guys, who's running a hyper kneel, using his plots against me. But every time he did so, another player at the table would poke at him after convincing him to attack me. When Adam's guard was down, he would poke at him, and I think it started to get on Adam's nerve that he was doing all the work against me while this other guy was gaining all the advantage from it, because Adam was fourth at the table. So then finally, when it came around to the last round, where I was going first, Adam was able to kneel out my key characters if he wanted, or kneel out the other person's key characters. And he basically got to decide who would take first and who would take second. And I offered Adam what I thought was an okay deal, since he was on fourth, that going first I would attack only the other player who was currently in third position, so that his power total would be lowered enough so that Adam would be third, and that would help his overall standings for the tournament. That, he knelt out the other person's board. That person got extremely bitter, and they ended up stacking their prize characters to Harrenhal, to the point where their prize characters plus Harrenhal gave me the win before the challenge phase.
that's bitter, yeah.
That's dedication. So it was predetermined that I would win. There was very little anyone else could do at that point. So they were just making sure that Adam couldn't. I couldn't make good on my negotiation with Adam. The final table was really interesting in the fact that I was playing three dragons decks. So I began the very first plot phase with asking anyone if they wanted to trade, you know, summoning or building seasons, and then of course played Shadows and Spiders so that none of them could have a challenge phase. The three of them, angry for some reason, did a triangle of trades so that I was left without a search or a bonus of any kind. Round two,
yeah,
I then played...
You still have your hold at that point. Nobody else is declaring challenges, right?
Which I got into, so that was good.
Everybody got a search. That's great.
And next round, I played... They were worried about a Valor. I played Bungle to see how they would react to that, because they had played out a lot of their good characters. So I had my bungled up, and the only person that didn't have a lot of good characters on the board was Steve Simone. But he had a Harrenhal and a bunch of chuds. And he was like, attack me, I'll beat you, you can Valor, and then I'll cancel everyone's save and we'll start this game again. And I'm sure that Steve was thinking to himself, if everyone's good dragons and Daenerys is dead and Jon gets wiped out, I get to play my good dragons and this will be an easy victory if I could just find some resource locations, which he didn't have at the time. But... instead, I played out a bunch of characters, which made the other Dragons players think I didn't have Val, because I had mentioned at the beginning that I didn't know why I didn't bring Val. So they played out a bunch of characters, and then, of course, I did Bungle, and I did Valor. I wiped their board, and this time when I went into my hold, like a smart person, I searched out a character so that I would have a better recovery. After that, it was a lot of back and forth. By the fourth plot, it seemed like someone was going to win that turn, and I tried to take initiative and win. Since I had a captured cog, I Rise of the Kraken, which gave me a nice 10 initiative, but sadly I couldn't go first. One of the dragon players had played, well, a kid from DC had played the 1-11-1 plot.
Betrayal.
Betrayal at the Wall. And chose to go first, and he almost won it. He got up to 14 power, but Chad worked pretty hard blocking his attacks, since he supported Steven, to basically make sure that he couldn't get those power. And he had also played an epic battle prior to the turn, so the challenge phase wasn't going to be his only opportunity to win. After which, Chad played a little bit more defensively, got up to a pretty high power total, but didn't think he could pull through the win until the epic phase, because he basically got to a point where during the epic phase he could probably still block out Kid and then win himself. And I had told him that I would take power from Kid during the challenge phase in order to ensure that Kid could not win during the epic phase. So my first challenge, I did take power from Kid. Then I played a series of events that basically let me get another 3 power, let me take an additional power challenge, which I did against Steve. Chad decided that maybe, since he supported Steve, he could block. I reminded Chad that I had Intimidate, so he did not block. I got it unopposed with Rise of the Kraken. I won the game. I think that if Chad had decided to block at any point there, I would have probably only taken second, and that was my first goal, was only to take second. I was just surprised that no one blocked any of my challenges to stop me. And that was it. I won Melee, and I was surprised.
And well, it's Melee, and you're good at it. I mean, this is in essentially 14 days, in 2 weeks worth of time, this is your second North American Melee Championship.
Yeah, I like Melee. I really enjoy it. And I learned a lot from my hero, who is Chad, which is, it was just awesome playing with him at the final table. And if you look back, he makes every Melee cut all the way. Him and Steven, they're there at that final table an inordinate large amount of the time, which really proves to me that they're great Melee players. And it was
proves
awesome
to me that they should be matched in the semifinals instead of...
So before we close off talking about Melee, I sort of want to talk about the aftermath of this Melee tournament. I mean, previous tournaments have resulted in new additions to the restricted list or changes to the scoring or things like that. Do you expect any changes between now and Worlds?
I think, you know, after playing all these different decks, the one card to me that probably needs to hit the restricted for Melee is Harrenhal.
That was actually the one that was on my list as well. I think it's just too ubiquitous. In and of itself, it destroys the format or anything, but I just think it's a no-brainer to put it in your deck, and you don't really want a ton of that.
Yeah, it's in every deck. It's so good in Melee, and I actually saw two cases where, one at my own table, one at a different table, where someone let someone else win by using Harrenhal and giving them prize power.
Oh, interesting.
Yeah, they killed their own prize characters, and then Harrenhal flipped and gave the final two power.
So what about the combo deck that you were talking about? Do you think something needs to be done to prevent that?
Absolutely.
And what do you think the answer is? Just prepare for war at this point?
You know, let's just see that three times
phase. I want it.
Go across the board and be done with it. And you know what? When I talked to the wizard, the person that created that combo deck, that's what he said. He said, just put the three time a phase thing in place. He says he loves characterless. He loves playing combo. Those are the only types of decks he really plays if he can, if they're competitive. And he says even a player like him would not be mad about the three times a phase. And then it would just stop all shenanigans, yeah. No matter what. You never have to worry about it again.
It would also make keeping track of Harrenhal somewhat simpler.
Yes.
Just a wee bit anyway. Yeah, no, I think that's definitely the case. I did want to talk a little bit because dragons have always been quite prominent in Melee. But they've really dominated the format for the last little while, and they've been propped up even more so by the fact that Mel's Favor threatens other characters. Should something be done there? Either, I mean, I don't think getting rid of Mel's Favor would do enough to hurt the dragons, because, you know, it doesn't. But, you know, is there something that should be done to those dragons?
I don't think so.
I don't. To me, they're like the default deck in Melee.
They are the default deck.
Three of them at the three sets of dragons at the Gen Con final table. At the North American final table, there were three sets of dragons. At the Gen Con, or Worlds last year, I don't actually remember. I don't think there was one set of dragons. At Gen Con last year, I also don't remember.
I guess it's really hard to argue with the numbers, eh? I guess if I were to do something about dragons, I would try to do a baby step, maybe restrict the dragon Danny. That would reduce this, you know, the normal type of dragon deck's power a little bit, because they wouldn't be able to run a power claiming event.
Mm-hmm.
Something like that, some kind of minor change. Because I feel like it's a very, very good deck because it's explosive. Even when you don't have Danny out, it can be very explosive with the turning grounds and other ways to stand your dragons. And two power claims is just so good, but I think it could be careful.
Danny might be a candidate there. I can definitely see that. Yeah. Or people just need to stop trading summoning seasons with dragon decks.
Yes, yeah. The dragon decks normally run like five really key characters and then a whole bunch of chuds in order to just set up really well so they can get into those key characters. So giving them an extra summoning season normally gives them a much bigger boon than giving another player.
Now, there's one other change that I've mentioned a couple of times, but I still really strongly feel that they need to fix the three-player game. Luckily, Canadian Nationals had 24 people, perfect six tables of four. I don't know about Gen Con, but I think all your tables were four-player tables. But a three-player table is just no fun.
There was a three-player table, though, at Gen Con.
You were? Yeah.
No, I wasn't, but there was other ones.
And I just think that you need to change the way support and oppose work somewhat in Melee, or the way the titles work somewhat in Melee. You know, maybe take two of the titles out of the pool or something like that to make it a little more flexible. And, you know, I think it has to be done because it's just no fun at all to be in a three-player table. All right, so this is the intermission between Melee and Joust, the chance to talk about some of the FFG news relating to Thrones and that kind of stuff. I tried to keep abreast of all the interviews that Team Covenant did. Some of them touched a little bit on Thrones, one with Lucas Litzinger, the Netrunner lead design, compared a few things to Thrones in interesting ways. So did the Conquest LCG designer, and Damon Stone was interviewed and spoke about Game of Thrones a little bit. But there wasn't a ton of news out of FFG about Game of Thrones.
But there was a ton of news out of the community because of the new draft packs.
And that was a surprise to me. I don't think it was mentioned in the in-flight report. I still haven't seen the video of that because it's not up yet. But I saw a tweet from Dennis saying, you know, we're having an unofficial draft tournament tomorrow by the new starters. And from then on, it was just this influx of people posting pictures of new cards for this new draft cycle, which I think is called Westeros Edition.
Yep, that's correct. So it's called Westeros Edition, and it has some of the cards to come in it. Some of these bomb characters were, you know, making big waves at Gen Con, and you can actually go check out our Facebook page to see some of those bombs, because Alex has the pictures posted up there. Yeah, I'm not sure how the playability of these cards work. Now, I know for Gen Con, they said, you know, everything up to Chapter Pack X. So if they go back to their old, you know, standard of everything that's been released is playable for Worlds, does that mean we can use these cards that don't say draft format only, even though their official chapter packs haven't been released?
Yeah, that's an odd situation. You're right that clearly for Gen Con it specifically specified which chapter packs were available and which weren't. But in general, they just say, you know, when cards are released, they're available. My guess is that will be specific to that the draft format cards won't be included in that. But they may have to clarify that.
Well, they definitely would have to, because if it doesn't say draft format only, it's officially,
yeah, exactly.
You could put it in your normal deck.
And that may be an issue for Worlds as well. Now, you mentioned draft format only. Now, in the previous draft pack, there was one draft format only card, if I remember correctly, and that was the Agenda.
There's a whole bunch now. So they've decided to shore up the resource base a lot by adding a one-cost neutral that reduces the cost of a character by one, but also has a single influence on it. And it's non-unique, so you can run three of these. And that really gives a lot of influence in the draft pack. So before, where people had all these problems trying to get enough influence to play any of the cards like Red Vengeance, it's not so hard now.
Mm-hmm.
And I think that makes a big difference. But there's also a bunch of other draft format-only cards.
Yeah, I saw a couple of plots that give card advantage that seem to be one of the popular choices as well. I'm pretty excited. I think that shows that they're going a little further into balancing it out and learning lessons from the first cycle. So, now, I did want to talk about, I mean, we don't generally spend too much time on spoilers, but a couple of spoilers, or at least one spoiler, has been making a big splash, and that's the new version of Euron Crow's Eye. Have you seen that one?
Oh, man, yeah. That's the one where when he attacks, people can't defend.
If he's attacking alone, people can't defend.
Yeah.
People seem to be looking at that and going, oh, my God, this is amazing. And I guess I'm a Greyjoy player, and I look at it and go, meh.
I go, wow, that's pretty cool.
It's flashy. It just doesn't seem all that good. And maybe I'm missing something. I know that people are talking about using this with support of Harlaw. So you have now 7 gold and 2 cards invested in getting 3 unopposed challenges on a character that doesn't even have renown. And a vulnerable character with no crest and no immunities and nothing. I mean, playing 5 gold characters is difficult. And we play the Red Viper. He's got these immunities and protections. But even if this cycle makes 5 gold characters easier to play, I'm going to play the Euron Crow's Eye that has renown, a war crest, gives all a raider's stealth when he's attacking, and doesn't let the opponent play events. Like, the only advantage this one has is that he has the king trait.
And people can't defend at all. Right,
right, but most of the time, if you have 2 raiders attacking and you're stealthing 2 targets, you're going to win the challenge. You're going to get renown, so you're going to get the same benefit as unopposed from the other Euron.
Yeah, but you have to commit other things. Like, he's very good to be able to push through whatever that challenge is you wouldn't normally be able to push through. I think there's a value to that card.
I think if you have huge board states where you have, like, 8 wildlings on one side and a whole bunch of other stuff on the other, then, yeah, this is much better than stealth. He can't declare defenders. You're going to win the challenge. But you're Greyjoy. You're at least running one reset. You know, you don't get these boards where you have 11 characters on either side as Greyjoy.
He's still good in decks that, you know, can push through one or two challenges with their four characters, and now he's on board, so now he can get through that intrigue that you might not have been able to do, or that power that you weren't able to do because you chose to do military.
I think the other Euron wins those challenges anyway. I don't know.
I'm not sure about that. The other Euron doesn't just win just because he has stealth.
He's four strength and has stealth and has a war crest. I don't know.
Yeah, you know, Greyjoy has a lot of unopposed tech. Take advantage of that, so there won't be any chuds blocking him. I'm not saying that he's, like, broken. I'm just saying that I think he's better than you're making him out to be.
Yeah, it's horrible.
True.
Like, really horrible. The other cards
that
haven't really been making a splash are the new castle plots, and people haven't been talking about them, but we'd already seen one spoiled on the official FFG site, and it looks like the other two that have been spoiled follow in the same vein. When they move to the used pile, they get some minor effect, and they have a pretty good stat line. So there's this delayed build-up, but none of them seem to be kind of like cities or rivers where they build up on one another. So you don't get this effect where you wind up with a predictable plot deck. You could put one castle plot in your plot deck and still get good mileage out of it, although there is some synergy with the spoiled Elaine Stone with castle plots. But, you know, one of them is a 4-6-2, and when it moves to your used pile, one of your characters gets put to the bottom of your deck. You know, you compare that to Retaliation, a 4-8-2 with a small disadvantage, or you compare it to Breaking and Entering, a 3-4-2 with the, you know, the small advantage. It's interesting, and I kind of like that broadcasting your intent. The other one I think was called, I can't remember what it was called, but it was when it moves to your use pile, you get to draw a card and your opponent discards a card at random. And I think this is a really nice card because it's generating card advantage of two, but it's not just putting two cards in your hand or anything. But it's also a really good card to play if you know Valor is coming next turn, where you go, okay, he's going to Valor or I'm going to Valor next turn, so I'm playing this, and then when my Valor goes off or when his Valor goes off, you know, I'm up a card and he's down a card, and I've swung the hand position. And, you know, that's a kind of thinking one step ahead that I really like. So I'm looking forward to see more of these and how they play out. The final thing I want to talk about news out of Gen Con is that there was absolutely no news about a Core 2.0.
Nothing.
I was hoping there'd be, like, the beginnings of hints about what they're going to announce in November for whatever rotation or card pool stuff, where there was going to be, like, a new deluxe box or something that they were going to announce that was going to give us clues. Nope, just nothing. Tight-lipped. We'll get word till November.
3 more months. So I had a great, great day at Joust. I got to play actually around 15 games because between my official tournament games, I tended to play other people that had come up to me and said, you know, I finished my official game. Do you want to play with our tournament decks anyways? Or twice my opponent said to me, I'd love to play that again now that I've seen your deck and see if I can beat it. And I said, sure, and we played again. So it was a long day of Thrones, you know, somewhere close to 16 hours. And I remember that when I finally got the card design and I was overall champion, and Nate told me that, my adrenaline just went away, and it was like hitting this giant brick wall.
So that would have been the match against Chad Jamnik, right? In the semis? No, the quarterfinals.
The quarterfinals.
That's right.
And I think I still played very strongly my next game, but that final game, I feel like I just wasn't on my game at all. So that's going to be posted by Team Covenant, I think, at some point in the future. And I'll just apologize to all the fans for my play at this moment.
You had the fans. People were following on the Facebook group. We were live updating the Annals, live updating a challenge website that Scantral was running. People in the Skype group were asking, oh, wait, what's John's power total now? And there I am, you know, Facebook messaging Aaron Glazer, who's sitting there at the table, then updating me so I can update everyone. So, first of all, massive thank you to Aaron Pulse Glazer from 2C1C for keeping in touch and giving me live updates so I could follow with my heart, my mouth, and so the community could follow along. And massive props to you, John. The official record says you won 10 games in a row, lost your 11th. I mean, that's a stellar performance, especially since, you know, I helped you test this deck a little bit. I was less involved in the tweaking, but I would say we called the meta completely wrong.
Oh, yeah, it was horrible. when I got there, and I was the first person to submit my deck list, so I submitted it, and I submitted a thing, and then DC shows up, and Corey says, oh, yeah, we're playing Lannister. And I went, oh, my God, I am in so much trouble. That is the absolute worst matchup for Power Behind the Throne deck. It's something with a ton of intrigue icons and some spot kneel. And I was so scared. At that moment, I was like, how badly did I call this meta? Is it going to be filled with Lannister and Martell and Liv 2? Because these are the decks that would normally cause the most problem for this one. And it was.
And it was.
Yeah, it was.
And I want to mention this because we take pride in being able to share the very best information with our listeners, in being able to, you know, we don't try and hide any of our information. We don't tell you exactly what deck we're playing. But when we're analyzing the meta, we're doing it for real. And God, did we get it wrong. Like, when I saw people start to post updates, and I think Kyle Slensky said he was playing Lannister No Agenda, and his first two matches were mirror matches, I'm like, oh, John's not even going to make the cut. We messed this one up bad. And I think the proof is that no one would believe that you would play Power Behind the Throne if you knew Lanny and Martell were going to be there.
I mean, this deck has one deck that it just rolls, and that's basically any deck with a Stark card. So that's what I was hoping for, a whole lot of Stark that I would get a lot of easy games with and then be able to make the cut. I didn't play any standard Stark at all. I mean, I played Kyle, and he was running a heavy intrigue Stark DW deck.
Darkwing Surfers, yeah.
Yeah.
No, that was weird. I mean, and that's a complete reversal from Canadian Nationals and Blackwater, which both sort of followed the same trend of having a lot of Stark, a fair bit of Greyjoy, a fair bit of Targ, and then the other houses had basically dropped off the radar. And, you know, I'm surprised. I wonder how much of that is just that, you know, DC is 15 or so people, and they were playing Lanny and Martell, and so that shifts the way the whole meta looks. But we still don't have the full stats for Gen Con. I'm in contact with FFG to get them up in the annals, so hopefully we'll be able to look at them in a little more detail and see where we went so wrong. But obviously you managed to pull it off, so well, tell us a little bit about the deck and what the plan with the deck was.
So the deck was, I guess I'll start from the beginning. So this year, because you weren't going to Gen Con, I decided to build with Stephen Simone. So Stephen and I built different decks for probably a couple weeks on and off, maybe a couple hours here, a couple hours there. Nothing really intense. And at some point, we realized that we didn't have as much time as we wanted to prepare for Gen Con. So we introduced a third person to the group, and that was Aaron Glazer. And we kept up that, you know, sporadic building, but we never really settled on a deck. In fact, at Canadian Nationals, we had taken, you know, a couple hours after Nationals one night, sat down and said, we got to pick something so we can tweak it to be ready for Gen Con. And on the car ride home from Canadian Nationals, I got a text message, because both Aaron and Simone were driving together. I got a text that said, we've picked the deck, it's Barra Sails. And I said, oh, okay, well, send me the list. So I did. They did. I proceeded to play against some of what I think is the better players in the world, like Florian Mask and yourself, Alex, and you guys just crushed me. And this thing couldn't beat Stark No Agenda. And I said, it's going to be filled with Stark at Gen Con. We can't play a deck that doesn't beat Stark No Agenda. And they're like, no. Well, actually, Aaron's immediately agreed with me, but Steve thought that he could tweak it to beat Stark No Agenda, which I think he finally did. But at that point, we basically ended up going different ways with the build, where I decided that I was going to take one of my old decks, which was the Lannister Power Behind the Throne, which I took to second at a store championship here in Gatineau, and tweak it for the new meta, while Steve decided to continue to build his Barra deck. So Aaron and I changed about four or five cards from my previous deck and tested a bunch, and it did really well. And I decided the next day that I was going to drive down to Montreal and play in a local event there. I think Montreal is an extremely strong meta, so I think going to a tournament pre-Gen Con where they're all bringing some of their best stuff would be a good test. And I managed to go undefeated in that tournament. So that gave me a lot of hope for the deck. I came back here, built that deck, built the Barra, built a Stark DW deck that we had thought was pretty strong, and said, I guess I'll pick a Gen Con. So the night before Gen Con, I was playing the Barra deck once again against Florian Mass, and he said, don't take this. This deck will not win Gen Con. He goes, go with your Lanny. I haven't seen it, but I think that's a good choice, a Lanny Power Behind the Throne. just do that. And a bunch of other people previous to that had told me, whatever you do, don't take that Lani power behind the throne. Lani power behind the throne can't win anything. So I was very conflicted, but I finally decided to go with the deck that felt best for me, which was the Lani. So that was like the long and short of how the deck came into existence. The deck is really focused on good setups. So I decided to drop a whole bunch of the standard Lani draw in order to do that. So there's no Golden Tooth Mines.
No Golden Tooth Mines for Strike No Agenda to steal from you.
Yes, exactly. And that was another concern. But there's no the Mandarin. My draw all comes from Janos, Toman, and a single Widow's Wail. Mm-hmm. So there's not a ton of draw, but there's enough to keep up some cards. And a lot of my matches ended by third or fourth plot, so I didn't need like long-term draw, I felt. And I played a lot of cheap characters, and I played what I thought were all the Lannister bombs, like No Kneeling, Jaime, Cersei, Tywin, and I threw in a couple Daenerys Targaryens. And once I had Dany in the deck, I realized that with Cersei, Tommen, Dany, and Margaery, I had like five queens and two kings that reduced that big Joffrey army. Mm-hmm. So I threw two of those in the deck too, and that card was so much money for me all day long. It's this huge army. It wasn't just the fact that it melted two characters, it was the fact that it was just this big wall that I could smash into people's faces at a reasonable cost. So that was really where I thought the deck started to really shine, was the use of those cards. So I had these really great cards that could help me close, and then a bunch of chuds to go into Claim Soak or push through challenges. I ran a sub-theme for the Wildling, which I enjoy, in order to get even more Neil in there. But the basic idea of the deck is to use the any phase Neil events, pre-plot, and then to roll into Fear of Winter. One of the big discussions I had with Aaron prior to the tournament was when to use Fear of Winter turn one and when not to. And I told him that certain types of players will just punish you if you use Fear of Winter T1. And I said, whatever you do after the cut, I don't think a Fear of Winter opening is the right play in many circumstances. There are circumstances, but I don't think it's the right play in many. And even I said, when you're high in the Swiss, I think the same rule starts to apply. And sadly, he didn't listen to me. And when he faced Peter Wilson from Montreal and got Valor to T1 while he revealed Fear of Winter, he wept a little since he played an ally and Varys came out of shadows to completely destroy his board.
Yeah, I heard both of his losses were against Stark No Agenda.
No, his other one was actually to Martell No Agenda, who also Valored him T1.
Oh, yeah, that's right. So
Stephen Simoni, yeah.
Yeah. So I want to, before we go into, you know, the tournament experience for you, I want to mention that, well, you're a genius. Both of the decks that we've had success with at these last two national tournaments, the Live 2 and the Power Behind the Throne, have both featured on the cast, and both of them were brought to the table by you months and months ago in a previous iteration. So in our Lani episode, you brought a Power Behind the Throne that was similar to this one. It's been tweaked since.
Five cards difference.
Well, the Dannys and, yeah, some other stuff in there.
Yeah.
And then the Live 2 was also your creation. You're like, we could probably do something with this. And that was months before we, you know, coalesced it into a refined deck. But you're a visionary. You're a visionary, John.
I don't know about that, but I'm not afraid to use stuff that, you know, I shared with the community at tournaments, that's for sure.
Yeah.
So I don't want to go through, you know, a play-by-play of my day, but I played some really great players. I'd like to talk about some of the decks I played against that I thought were really interesting. For instance, Kevin from Texas brought a Barra Black Sails. Barra Dark Winds, Dark Words. And not only was it a great deck, he is a phenomenal player. That guy was a machine when I played him. Like, he didn't miss a response. He didn't miss anything. He was just on top of it. There was, like, maybe once or twice I saw minor things. Definitely a really strong player. Really great deck. And I was really scared in my cut match. So once the Swiss was done, we were in top 16, I got to face him again. And when he was drawing his cards, he draws them one at a time when he fills his hand. And he's looking down, and around the fourth card, he starts smiling. And when he hits the fifth card, I think the smile hit his ears. When the sixth card came, his eyes got wide. And when he hit the seventh, he actually started to laugh at me. And he looked at me and he goes, I'm keeping this hand. And I'm like, oh no, this is not good. He sets up seven cards and he tells me, he's like, like the chance of this happening for this deck is like almost zero. Like it's like the moon and the sun of a line hit his deck and he's set up seven cards because obviously it's 75 cards. It's filled with events. A seven card setup is just crazy. So that made my game against him very difficult in that top match. But I did manage to win. But it was really fun because it was a back and forth and there was, you know, constant pressure, but there was no, you know, clear instant winner. There was a chance the whole time.
I do think, and, you know, seven card setups aside, that generally speaking, Power Behind the Throne matches up quite well against Darkwing Starkwords because if you can start to deprive them of the hand presence required to continue drawing, I think you have a large advantage. So early claim twos and things like that for the hand can give you a lot more breathing room.
I agree. I couldn't control his hand. He was running rivers. So he was just drawing and drawing. And, like, I remember I was like, how many cards do you have now? And he'd be like three. And then I'd ask the next turn, he'd be like seven. And I'd just be like, I can't get the cards down. Luckily, I didn't open with fear. So I was able to use that to kind of tempo play him later and then dry season to choke out his resources and let me get the win. Mm-hmm. I think if we'd gone another turn, I was probably in some big trouble. So that was fun. Another memorable match was I played Kyle from 2C1C, and he was running Darkwing Starkwords with a lot more intrigue icons than one would expect. And his setup against me was just scary. It had Theon. It had this black where he dies. You get to do a military challenge. And he had one of the monocons that would let him get that military challenge basically unopposed.
So you were expecting a military right at the...
Oh, I ate a military.
Right? You ate a military, right, in Marshalling, yeah.
Yeah. So that was, again, it was an interesting match. But I think basically he used the wrong house. He had the Stark card, and therefore my deck is a good matchup versus that in general. He felt that I got a little lucky, I think. I got that vibe. He didn't say that, of course. He's a nice guy. I got that vibe. So he wanted to play again after our match was done, and we did. And I won again, so I think that made him feel a little bit better about it, that it wasn't just kind of like a lucky fluke thing. And he still made the cut, so...
Okay, speaking of he's a nice guy, you know, we know of him from 2C1C and so on, and he's a prominent member of the community. But did I hear correctly when someone told me that he was wearing sunglasses during the melee?
I have no idea. It's possible. I didn't see him wearing sunglasses. I saw him in the melee on my second table or third table, and he was not wearing sunglasses at that point.
Okay.
I could see him doing so as a joke, maybe for the full first table, you know, kind of like a poker match or something. But
I think that is, I mean, yeah, I'm glad to hear it's not the case because I think that's a step too far. For a social game like this, I think that's just...
Oh, I'm not saying it's not the case because I actually heard that at Gen Con he was wearing sunglasses during his first table as well, but I think he was doing it as a joke. So, I mean, it is kind of funny if you think about it, as long as he's, you know, it depends what he's saying at the table, if he's getting all serious and putting his cards up now, but I played with him afterwards. He was not that type of player. He talked a lot. He was very good at the melee game, and I think he's got some strong melee chops as well as decent joust. You can see that by his results getting into the top 16 in both events. But all that really matters is that I beat him twice, and he's on 2C1C.
All that really matters is that at every single tournament in which a 2C1C host and a Beyond the Wall host has been, the Beyond the Wall hosts have all placed higher.
Actually, when I sat down next to him at the melee table, I looked over and I told him, oh, it's you. And he goes, yeah, what? And I go, I hate you. And he said, why? And I said, because you're on that other podcast. So yeah, that was obviously, I was joking at the time, but it was fun. He was a nice guy. It's nice to meet him in person. I got to play Steven Simone, which was great, as well as Chad, and both of them were running a Martell NA deck. That's about a 50-50 match for me, I think, normally. So that was, both those matches were interesting and close. I got to play Nathan, who was running a Greyjoy Black Sails, and he was just rolling Lanny all day long with it. I think he played four or five Lannister prior to meeting me that he just absolutely had no problems with. So that really worried me when he sat down across when I heard he had such big success versus Lanny players. But
and Power Behind the Throne and No Agenda are not the same deck.
Are very different. Yeah, they're a very different monster. So I was able to to win that match, but I had a lot of fun because he was a nice guy, and we got to talk during the match, and it was, I don't know, I felt low stress by that point because we had both done so well, we was probably sure that we were making the cut. So because of that, we got to kind of have a good time, and he was a really nice guy.
So I very much look forward to seeing that list if Nathan will post it, because I've had trouble making Black Sails work against Lannister. I mean, we worked on a Black Sails deck for Gen Con last year and it did very, very well. Yep. But I always felt that it was shaky against Lannister No Agenda especially. I felt that that was a really, really painful match. So I would really like to see what tweaks he's done to that, because that deck still holds a special place in my heart.
Yep, so he was running Fury as is restricted, so he was running 2B events to help with stand and stuff. So, yeah, I can't wait to see the list either. I mean, from what I hear, he's been playing this list for a really long time. He took it to his regional, which he won with it, I think.
Yeah.
And everyone else was saying that this was kind of his baby for close to a year. So I think part of it's probably that he just knew how to drive this thing to the, you know, the perfect level because of so many games in, which is great.
Excellent. So I guess it's a similar question, if that's about it for the joust, is what do you think the aftermath of this joust is? Because in previous years, for instance, last year, a good portion of the cut was running a similar deck, and even those who weren't, many were running the same card, were running Manning the City Walls, and we saw a restriction of that just to make sure that the meta would change for Worlds. So this time the cut was much more varied.
Yeah.
I don't know about the overall field, because, again, I don't have that data. What do you expect as restrictions or changes going forward between now and Worlds? I don't mean Wheels Within Wheels, because, you know, that wasn't played at Gen Con. I mean in reaction to the Gen Con results.
I had a feeling like there was a lot of Harrenhal. You know, a couple of the people I played had it, obviously, but because of the Fear of Winter, it was tough for people to start playing a ton of locations normally against me.
Mm-hmm.
You know, they had to keep their board presence up. They couldn't waste the tempo play of playing Harrenhal, so I saw it discarded more than I saw it hit the table. But a lot of people were complaining about it and saying that the reason X won is because they drew theirs before the other player got their own. So we might see Harrenhal hit the list.
See, I really hope we don't. And, you know, I've spoken on this before, but I think it's got a fair bit of a tempo play. You're losing. You're using two cards to get your first cancel, the Harrenhal and the first character you get rid of. You've probably spent 2-3 gold on that. You know, it's an early tempo play. You know, even the houses in which it fits in, Peter Wilson wasn't running a Harrenhal in his Start No Agenda, and Start No Agenda is an easy place to slot it in there. And he's a phenomenal player, and he made that as a conscious decision.
I have to say that Peter's Stark No Agenda list is probably one of the strongest lists I've seen from Stark, and you are correct, it has no Harrenhal. So, and I wasn't running one either.
And Matt Lay wasn't running any. I mean, it's a phenomenally powerful card, but I think people are too quick to slot it in decks where it doesn't belong.
Yes. However, all that being said, the general murmur is that it's negative. Like, people don't seem to like it. And I think when the community starts to complain, FFG normally listens to them. Whether that's, you know, because it's too powerful or just because for whatever reason, you know, 70% of the players get this bad taste in their mouth, I don't know why, about Harrenhal, then FFG would say,
they're all strong control players, and this is the aggro chance.
Maybe it's like, you know, but I think FFG says, you know, we're a game, we're hoping people to have fun experience, and if 70% of our players aren't having a fun experience because of card X, let's reduce the prevalence of it. So we might see it because of something more like that than any real issue in my mind. Because I didn't see any of this Harrenhal abuse that people had been worried about. I saw it, you know, have some good effects, but like you said, there's tempo plays on it. It's costly. I saw it got newly made lorded. I saw it get frozen solided.
Three Greyjoys in the cuts and a bunch of Starks, or, you know, two Starks there. That's a fair bit of people who can just neuter
it. Take your Harrenhal away. Yeah. It's definitely a good player card as well. I find that you need to know what to cancel and what to let go with it. You just don't just cancel everything or you're in pretty big trouble.
So is there anything else that you think would jump out? I'm wondering whether the, you know, and it clearly didn't do well enough to concern anyone, but whether the interplay between, say, Darkwing Dark's Words and Crossing the Mummers Ford is something that they'll have to look at, because it is a fair bit of draw, or whether there's, you know, again, it hasn't caused a problem yet, but it's something that they might be keeping an eye on. I don't know if you felt it was prevalent.
It was, like, I played a lot with the Dark Wings decks prior to Gen Con, and I thought the vast majority of the really good ones were running the rivers to link with the Dark Wings, Dark Words. But we didn't see, you know, other than the Barrow one, anyone really go super far with a Dark Wings, Dark Words river combination.
Oh, yeah,
Kyle wasn't wearing the rivers,
He was running Mira, yeah, that's right.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm, I suppose. And then what's other potential items of concern? I mean, I guess going into the tournament, I thought that there'd be 5 or 6 Stark in the cut, maybe 7 or 8, and that we'd have to look at another way to sort of tweak Stark just a little bit down in popularity, not necessarily because it was going to win or because it's an NPE, but just like manning the city walls last time, just to make sure that people aren't playing the same thing the next time round. But maybe... I mean,
people found the natural solution to Stark. Lannister. There was a lot of it.
But the Lannister No Agenda, when I've played it, has done very badly against Stark. And I don't know how to fix that matchup. Maybe I just need to wait till either Matt Lay or the DC crew post their list. That doesn't generally happen, though.
Yeah, they were running a pretty heavy 2-claim list with Spot Neil and, you know, big smash you in the face cards. And I think those are the ones that do well against Stark generally, those 2-claim lists with Lannister. So.
All right. Any other cards that jumped out at you for...
Honestly, the meta is in such a good place right now, Alex. I think Gen Con proves that. Yes, there was a lot of Lannister, but I think that's because everyone was making the meta call against Stark.
Mm-hmm.
You know, otherwise, I think there would have been less Lannister. And I think, you know, we have this really nice balance going on. I didn't feel like when I lost to the Martell NA deck in the end that it was overpowered or that there was a card in there that just hosed me and it should be restricted. I just felt like he got the right cards at the right time, and that really was bad for me. So, yeah, I wouldn't jump to any restrictions personally, but I guess we'll see what FFG wants to do.
And anything that you think could come off given the way the meta was looking? The ones that I'm still looking at mostly are things like the Hatchling's Feast and Westeros Bleeds, because they've added Royal Decree and because we have these Harren Halls and because we have these tools that they could potentially come off and give control another tool.
I think you could drop the Veil Refugees off the list without too many issues. It would help Tunnels a bit and stuff, but I mean, they can probably come off the list. You might be able to take one of those, you know, global effects like Bleeds or Hatchlings off the list without too much problem. I would lean more towards Bleeds, I guess, so that it would help more than a single house.
Mm-hmm.
And leave Hatchlings on.
Yeah. Well,
as long as they don't restrict Harren Hall. If they restrict Harren Hall, you cannot do that. Yeah.
And then we need to put the 3x per phase limit.
Yes, yeah. You just got to put that across the board. Like, that has to happen.
Yeah.
I'm pretty sure that deck may have been playable in Joust, and I think the guy was just a nice guy and didn't want to play it.
It would have been harder in Joust because people have more counters, cancels, nightmares, things like that in Joust.
Absolutely.
Than they do. But playable, yes.
Run 3 Harren Halls, and it could have been nasty. I think he demonstrated it to the judges there, and I think that was his goal, to make sure FFG was aware of it, and I hope they'll do something soon about it.
Mm-hmm. All right, well, that's good to hear. Yeah, the meta looked very healthy. It probably, you have to cast your mind pretty far back to see a cut that diverse. I mean, a lot of no agenda, but not worrisome levels of it, and it sort of cancels itself out in that no agenda's advantages, like the Summoned by the Conclave, don't work very well against no agenda. So it'll control itself going forward. I'm really happy with the stats coming out of there.
Yeah, me too. And I mean, outside of the Joust game, Gen Con was a blast too. You know, I got to hang out with the Chileans. I got to basically party all Sunday with Sandy, Aaron, Peter Wilson, and Sean from Ottawa. And, you know, some of us went to True Dungeon. Aaron got us kicked out of a liquor store. Went to Guardians of the Galaxy while Aaron and Sandy slept. In the movie.
That's an expensive bed.
I don't think the idea was for them to sleep, but they had consumed quite a bit of alcohol by that 2 o'clock movie. Played some Guns and Cash, and then we did karaoke. Oof. It was a good night. Ended at about 5:30 in the morning. It started at 9 a.m. So, Gen Con's a blast, and it's always a big party at some point, and that was the day of the party, I think.
Also, the Gen Con Joust also sold out, and there was a waiting list. So
yeah, that's what they said.
You know, last year I think we had 108 people. This year, 128, that's right. And, you know, that's great for the game. That's it may sound like you've only gained 21 players, but over 100 players, it's close to a 20% increase. So that's good. Good for the game.
Yeah, it was a big field. I mean, it's tough for them to do it at Gen Con, these big, long tournaments, because you think about it, those employees were there for probably 18 hours. They got to be there a little bit before and a little bit after.
Yeah.
And there's 16 hours of Thrones, so that's tough on them. You really got to give props to, you know, in this case, the judge was Nate French. He put in a long day to make sure we all had a good time.
And I guess the final thing to come out of this is that as overall championship, you mentioned you do get to design a card, right? Because we had asked that on the podcast. We weren't sure if they were stripping those from North American championships.
Yes, yeah. I actually got confirmation before heading to Gen Con that the overall champion would get to design a card. So, and then Nate approached me and said he would get in contact with me at some later date for that. So that's exciting. I'm very happy, you know. I'm sad that I didn't win Joust, because we all know that, you know, Joust is kind of the more prestigious event. But I feel really good about my performance, and I'm super excited about designing a card.
And it's going to be a plug for the podcast, right? The quote will be like, snappy sign-off or something.
I don't think we're allowed to put those types of
flavor text. Oh,
yeah.
Oh, wow.
Yeah. Could be Beyond the Wall, though, right?
Beyond the Wall is a card name. I like that. But I could certainly see that working. You could have a picture of a handsome, young, energetic man and a big, fat. That, yeah, I like this already.
Okay.
Before I get carried away. Well, that pretty much wraps up our post-Gen Con episode. Closing comments. I definitely want to take this moment again to thank both Aaron and Morgan, who took time to stay in touch with me through presumably their phones or whatever fancy device children are using these days, to give me updates on your performance, on the tournament in general, on what was happening at Gen Con. Didn't quite feel like I was there, but I still got pretty emotionally invested in your power totals as they were being texted to me. So thank you very much to them and to Morgan, especially for putting me in touch with people that could get me the full stats. So hopefully I'll have those within a couple of days.
Yeah, for me, for Amelia, it's thanks to Morgan and Adam. And in Joust, just every player I played against, it was awesome.
Also, I want to make sure people know that there is another Octagon tournament starting up on, I think, the 24th is the day it starts. So you have to sign up before then. This is with the new triple elimination format, so you play until you've lost thrice. I think the sign-ups for that is on AGOT Cards, but it's also been cross-posted to CardGameDB. So check that out by all means. Even if you think that there'll be scheduling conflicts, if you may have to drop out, getting into some games with sort of tournament mindset and playing some players that you may never have played before across the world like that can be a huge boon to your play.
And fun.
Exactly. So I'm looking forward to that. I still haven't picked a deck. I guess I better do it fast.
I guess I better sign up.
Yeah, exactly. And what are we doing next week, John?
I have no idea.
I'm burnt out. Yeah, you're burnt out. I'm actually really, really pumped for Worlds because I'm still planning on making that, but it's a little ways off. Obviously, we have lots of things that we need to do as a cast. We still have an Nate French interview scheduled that we should finally be able to make some room for and some other things as well. But I don't know. Next week, I guess we improvise.
Yep. It'll be something snappy.
Maybe we'll just feature Buzz. They like Buzz that much. We'll just
have Buzz on the show.
The Buzz show, and he can juggle or something on the podcast.
Or just talk about whatever he wants.
That's right.
As long as it's throne-ish.
Yeah, even then, who knows? Juggling cats. Then at least we get sound effects.
Thank you for listening to Beyond the Wall. If you have any comments or would like to be featured on the cast, please let us know by email at beyondthewallpodcast@gmail.com or through Facebook at Beyond the Wall Podcast. If you've enjoyed the music, check out more of Antti Martikainen's work at the link embedded in the chapter data. See you all next week.